Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Green Team of the Legendarium, the patron spinoff of the Legendarium podcast, where we talk about the books and topics the main crew haven't gotten around to yet. I'm your host, Josh, or Chesky, and today I have with me Aridandus, the lover of short and good books.
Hey there.
And I also have with me Solution, the man who reads a lot.
Hey there, but not as much as Chesky, the man who reads even more.
I try, but I'm not always the fastest or the best reader. So thanks, everybody. We're going to be talking about Waybound today, the 12th and final book of the Cradle series by Will White. It's been an epic conclusion. It's been an epic time reading this long book series with us. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. But let's kind of just get started. Air, I've got two questions for you. Did you like the series overall? And then how were your feelings on Waybound as the ending book?
Overall, I will say that I am glad that I read the series. Perfect. It had good points. You know, the stuff I didn't like is well documented, but there were parts of it I did like, and I enjoyed the journey and I enjoyed doing it with you guys. It opened my eyes to another genre of books, right, that I should actually pay attention to. So I appreciate that. The ending book is too fan servicey, too long, and very mediocre. Sorry.
Those are harsh, harsh words from Era, who says he only speaks truth, but I think if we looked deep in his heart, we might find some other answers there. But that's okay. Solution, how about you? How did you feel?
As the series as a whole, I love it. It's one of my favorite series. The finale, you know, I enjoyed it. There definitely could have been better. Similar to Era's thoughts, but not nearly as negative, I think. I still had a great time with it, but I do think there was quite a bit of room for improvement and chances that Will White did not take that he should have.
Okay. I'm with you guys. I really liked this series. It's been it's always a fun time to read it and to enjoy the characters. I liked the book more than Era liked it, of course, but it's not a hard bar there most of the time for me. I could see a couple things. I thought there were some issues that I maybe had with it. It's tough to pinpoint exactly what didn't really work for me most of the time, but I think we'll get into that. So let's talk a little bit. We'll give a quick recap. I think we're just going to go kind of all spoilery. Non-spoilery, Era thinks it's too long. Josh and Solution think it might be a bit long, but mostly good. Does that sound right for non-spoilery thoughts there?
Pretty good. I mean, it's the end of the series. You know, Lyndon does things, and then we wrap pretty much most of the stuff up.
Yeah. Okay, here's something. Would you guys say it was too wrapped up or not wrapped up enough?
I'll go, because I know Aaron wants this one too. I'm going to say it was too wrapped up for what he was trying to do in one book. He either could have split it, or he just could have just left a lot of these little things that didn't really matter as just open-ended. And then he could have done this in like 450 pages and wrapped it up that way. And then been like, oh, maybe there is going to be a series later in 10 years if he wants to come back to it in this world or not. I feel like he could have done it that way.
Okay.
So the book was written as if it was he was given a checklist of things he had to accomplish before he got off. And it was like, did I accomplish this with X character? Yes, check. Did I accomplish this with Y character? Yes, check. That's how it felt like. That's what I meant when I say it's fan service-y, because I know that there were a lot of either characters or side stories or loose threads that had been hanging around the series. And each one of those parts were resolved in some way, shape, or fashion in this final book.
Okay. That's a fair thought. I can definitely see that part of it. We did close a lot of you know, threads and possibilities, and I think maybe a few more of them left open or just not explored could have been nicer.
Well, and that's just kind of like, let me go back to that, because that's actually one of the things I did like about the book, is that one, he obviously wrote the entire series with an outline or plan in mind. So there are things that he did in book 4 or book 7 or book whatever that are referenced and that he uses in later books, and that he definitely references again in Waybound, either directly or by implication. So that is something I do want to give him credit for.
Okay, that's perfect. No, I like that. I'll give you guys just a quick recap. This is going to be kind of the most bare bones recap you've ever heard. But at the end of the last book, they have taken out the Silent King. They are formulating their plan and they're going into their training montage. They go into their training montage. Lyndon is very powerful here. He's kind of pushing his friends through Dread God training to, you know, survive being around them because they're just so oppressive. He keeps getting called out to fight with Reagan Shen multiple times to protect Sacred Valley. They fight the Thundering Dragon, or the Weeping Dragon first. They kill him. Then they fight. It becomes a three-way fight between the Monarchs, the... Which one is it, you guys?
The last two Dread Gods?
Yeah, it's between the last two Dread Gods, the Bleeding Phoenix and the Wandering Titan, and Lyndon, with a couple other helps, you know, with Yeren and them helping and supporting behind the scenes, right?
Yeah.
And then they fight, they kind of break, they fight some more, they do end up killing all the Dread Gods. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, they do kill all of the Monarchs. I don't believe any of them choose to ascend, aside from the...
Northstrider.
Northstrider ascends, yes.
Yeah, okay. Northstrider ascends.
I have a different issue talking about Northstrider in a few minutes, and I'll get to that. The main crew ascends except for Lyndon because he has absorbed too much Hunger Madra. He cannot ascend correctly.
Too heavy.
Time goes on. He ascends. Everybody's happy in the end, right?
Yep.
Okay. Now, I'm going to... when Lyndon is fighting Northstrider, you guys remember this the first time, and he gets Northstrider in his hand, and he's like, Northstrider, are you going to ascend? And Northstrider's like, no. And then it kind of cuts to a different scene. Did you guys think that Lyndon had killed Northstrider then? Or did I miss something when I was reading it?
No, I didn't think so at all.
He remember, he started consuming Northstrider at that time. It talked about Northstrider breaking away. He asked him to ascend. So Northstrider wasn't with... If Northstrider had been in his grasp when that happened... then I would have had your same interpretation, but it was clear in the story that Northstrider and Lyndon weren't close when he made that.
I must have misread that then, because in my mind, Northstrider had been Lyndon had consumed Northstrider because he refused to ascend. Mm. And then when Northstrider popped back up, I'm like, wait a minute, he was dead. You cannot bring him back like this. And then I was like, okay, I must have misread it, but I just wanted to clear that with you guys.
No, he just, because he's so much of a monarch that he just consumes some of him. So normally when Lyndon consumes people, he consumes leaves him pretty much. Yeah. But so Northstrider was still alive.
Okay. I've got a couple thoughts here or a couple questions for you guys. Malice. What did you guys think of that? Did you think she would choose to ascend at the very end or not? I mean, she did not choose to. I kind of thought she might be pressured into it eventually.
No, I knew she was evil to the core. For Mercy's character development.
Okay.
And she was gonna die.
All right. And Era, how'd you feel about Malice's fighting and stuff?
No, she had to have died. I'm ambivalent as to who killed her and how, but the fact of her death was inevitable to me. I did not see a way in which she could ascend.
Yeah, she was too evil for the crew to be like, oh, we're going to let this you know, villain stay alive because we don't want to be the ones that kill people. I don't think.
Well, but she could have ascended to escape them, though, and been like, now I'm semi-protected because I'm not in their immediate sphere, right?
No, she's too prideful.
There's a couple things to that. One, Northstrider, I'll give a by contrast. Northstrider, even though he's clearly selfish, or Reagan Shan, clearly selfish, clearly will do things his way. And he will try to find technical ways to break his word. His word is his bond. And Northstrider is the same way. Malice, her word means nothing to her. I mean, she is as duplicitous as they come. So there's no way they could trust her. One. Two, the whole reason for this, the whole reason they refuse to ascend, like, she can't ascend because she can't get past her reasons for not wanting to ascend. It's not in her nature to do so.
Okay. No, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. I've got more to talk about if you guys want, but did you guys have anything you wanted to bring up in general about the book that we need to hit?
You go ahead, Era.
Yeah, well, let me start off with some things that I did like, because there are some things that I thought were well done. One of the questions I had was... because we talked about how Lyndon was going to have to kill the Dread Gods. We talked about that at length in the last book. But what were going to be the consequences for that? And the one thing that Will hit on, I thought pretty hard and pretty effectively, was Solution alluded to it earlier, was the weight. There's a spiritual weight to being a Dread God. Yeah. And I like, that was one thing that I liked, the way that was described and explained in the last book.
Yeah, we got hints throughout the previous book, Dread God, but in this book specifically, he gave us hints at like 20%, and then at about like 50% when he did take on the Weeping Dragon, that's when you're like, oh, Linden's not going to be able to ascend no matter what happens. So whatever was going to happen in this book, I was like, okay, he's, whether they, you know, orchestrate everything the way they wanted to and get all the monarchs to die at the same time or ascend at the same time they kill the Dread Gods and they have to, you know, like a piano, like they got to get everything all at once. He still wasn't going to be able to descend. So I did, like, I'm with Aaron. That was a cool way to do it because it's everything he wanted and he's not going to be able to do it to get his goals.
And let me add one thing. It did leave me a question with Northstrider because his Madra was a combination of blood and hunger. But hunger Madra isn't supposed to ascend, but he ascends.
I have to wonder if it's more of a quantity you have, whereas a Dread God, he's kind of fused with that hunger. And it's come become more of a part of him, but I that is something to think about. I'd have to look into that a little more.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the weight. I liked that it, you know, they kind of take care of everything, and all of his friends have to ascend immediately. They barely get any time to be like, hey, you know, I love you, see you later, we're gonna go. It's more like, hey, they're done, we gotta go, bye, see you later, you know, and they're just like immediately removed. And then Linda's just like, okay, well, I guess I'm just gonna keep doing stuff for quite a while.
Hanging out. Yeah. Yeah.
I like how my boy Zeal, he had his redemption arc. So I like that. So
he did. Right. Yeah.
That Mercy. Was a good redemption arc where he.
Mercy had some fun. I like Mercy's too.
Did I know we all kind of were rooting for Mercy to die or not ascend. I didn't think.
I thought she was going to die in the Malice fight. I'm happy that Little Blue and Orthos both got massive power-ups. Felt a little unearned for some of them, but I did at least like that Orthos is he's trying to improve, and he's no longer afraid of staying as a turtle. And he's doing his thing.
I liked part of it kind of shows, when we're talking about Orthos training, and mm-hmm. Orthos is like, hey, I need to get faster, stronger, because I just can't. I can't keep going at this pace to keep up with you and to help you, right? And so he does the shortcut with the Hunger Madra that Linden does, where he kind of absorbs a dragon and then that boosts him, right? Mm-hmm. But I like Linden's perspective there, that Linden, and I think you can see it throughout all the books, where Linden is like, yeah, Orthos is just a little different than me because Orthos took one dragon and then was like, man, I got to recover, I got to relax, I got to get back to myself.
Yeah.
And Linden was like, I would have been asking for another one immediately. You know what I mean? I would have taken that one, and it sucks that I get through it, but then hit me with another one immediately so I can just get as fast as possible. You know, just kind of showing that mindset that Linden's always had. Even in the first book, he has no power. He's like, how can I get more power? I'm going to go search for this fruit. I'm going to try this. And he never stops trying. You know what I mean? He could have given up when he was, and at any time before that, or taken it slower, and he never does.
Oh, no, you're right. That's actually, that's one of his defining features. We talked about this before, but you're right. It's one of the central themes of this story, that nothing is ever enough for him. He's just the type of person who, whatever he has, that's nice, I want more. That's who he is.
And it's fun to read about. Like, it fits a progression fantasy series very well. And I'm always going to love this series for that, because Linden's just great like that.
Though, to be fair, most people who are like that don't have Linden's kind of personality. They are not nearly that kind.
They're not humble or nice at all.
Yep. But can I talk about one or two quibbles I have with the book? I think it'll kind of help talk about the book more generally.
Yeah.
So if I had to give an overarching kind of like where I was just kind of gritting my teeth throughout the book, was the lack of stakes. I just did not feel any pressure or stakes at all. And he did the one thing that we all talk about as a trope that we do all the time. And he did it this time. And I'm like, fine, you do it once, that's great. He did it like 8 times. It's, we don't have time. We lack time. Everything's going to happen in 1 second, but I can accelerate my the way I think to 1,000 times as fast as a second so I can perform all my needed. So he used that lack of time constantly as a way to kind of make you feel pressure. I never felt it. And it just, every time I saw it, I was just like rolling my eyes, gritting my teeth, and kind of getting through that. So I don't know how you guys felt about it.
Well, it's a question of scale, right? When we started the first book, Unsold, we have space level scaling past Cradle. And now that we've gotten the entire crew up to this level, and Linden's technically like above a monarch, in this book he's literally fighting multiple monarchs at once and dread gods, to where we're no longer at a coherent way to like tell an action scene, because the way you do things has to be involving fate and muddying fate, but yet more than the other person who can also read fate. It just got very confusing, and I feel like this is a good way. You need to end this series before it gets too much like this and do a restart and a refresh. Like if he was going to do another series in the Cradle, outside the Cradle, but in the Cradle verse, then it would be cool to have them not have to worry about fate as a part of the action sequences. I felt like it was like near the upper tier and it needed to do a reset because it was getting confusing.
I think I can understand what you're saying, Era. There is definitely kind of a lack of stakes. It's more of a, they're going to accomplish this, but the real question is how are they going to accomplish it rather than can they or will they? And that leads to different stakes maybe, but I think this is kind of just that general progression slash fantasy trope where you have the first bad guy and then the next bad guy has to be stronger than them. And then now we're up to the point where we're fighting the strongest on the planet, you know, the monarchs and the dread guards at the same time. And it could have done worse, but I agree. Some stakes, something else could have been more impactful if we'd had something to stakes. Now, did you feel like you had some stakes with Suriel and Osriel? Because I was really afraid that Suriel was going to die, but then that was turned on its head in that Osriel, you know, sacrifices himself. And then she's able to be like, I trusted you. You brought me back. You did it. But I did, you know, he wasn't. What was your thoughts?
So that's actually a good point. So going back to the whole time thing, like it's even towards the end, like I could have to kill the Bleeding Phoenix, but then the Wandering Titan has to die within 1.8 seconds of the Bleeding Phoenix's death. Otherwise I'll be consumed by the Hunger Madra. Not really explained, but okay. But he accomplishes it. Great. You're right. Like with Suriel and Osriel, I did feel like there was a little bit more stakes because you weren't sure who's going to bite the bullet, but you kind of figured it might have been one of them, which led to kind of the corollary thing. We all talked about how we were expecting someone to die in this book. Nobody died.
Yeah, I wanted somebody to die. Kill your darlings. I
mean, well, there's a lot of monarchs that died, but none of our favorites that died, right?
Nobody we cared about.
I mean, there's a... But no, you're right. Like, I actually felt more... I had a greater level of interest in what was going on in the space part because... Mm-hmm. Everyone was on a roughly equal level, given Osriel's handicaps. Right. So, you know, I'm like, I was kind of more interested to see where that would go because everybody was on relatively equal footing.
And I did like that he hid his scythe underneath his worst enemy's feet.
He's basically his rival. That was the best. I cheered at that one. That was so good.
And I love it. He calls for it. And he's like, come. And it reverberates out. And everybody's like, oh, something's going down, but nobody knows. And then... You know, it pops up and he's like, yeah, I hid it under your feet because you'd never look there for it. And he's like, I hate you so much.
It was so good. That was such a good moment.
One of the things I do have a quibble with, though, is it was clear throughout the series that, like, you know, Osriel wanted to get a new icon, right?
Oh, I think
and then,
that's...
Yeah. And then it was referenced, he wanted to get the joy icon. Malice gets the joy icon.
No, Mercy.
Mercy, I'm sorry. Mercy gets the joy icon. And I'm sitting there going, he's got to say something. He's going to say something. He will absolutely. This is too low of a hanging fruit for him to say something. He doesn't say jack. He doesn't say anything. I'm like, that was frustrating. I'm sorry. That was just
that's fair. I think that was a missed opportunity there. I felt like it was a little. I don't know. I want to say it was almost a little rushed, but I think it was just the way he paced the end, where he's now gonna have Osriel take his old crew back together while Lyndon's doing his own thing until it's time. So I don't think he wanted to spend too much time with us having Azrael and them together.
All right, I've got a question for you guys. If you're going to manifest an icon, what icon do you manifest?
Chaos.
Now, you can you can answer for yourself, or you can choose to have us answer for you.
Oh, sorry, I ruined it.
Oh, everybody, I want us to answer for everybody else. So
okay.
Okay.
All right.
Because we're all going to pick something that is something cool we want.
I'll go first. Era, I love you. God.
But
go on. I think
I think
you would have the argumentative icon, if that's possible.
Oh, that's good. I was going to go with curmudgeon.
Not in a bad way. But you have this ability to argue and to deliver a point and to, you know, I think that just fits you, right? So I think that would be your icon. Now,
how would an argument icon comment? Would it be like a mouth?
Sure.
No, I think it would be like a speaker icon.
More of a debate icon, right? Like a podium, right?
With a gavel.
I like it with the gavel. It would be a gavel. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So I hope that doesn't offend you. That's what I love it. Soul is harder for me. Soul. I don't know. I'm going to have to think about this, Soul. Why don't you pick up?
Well, Soul, I already mentioned Eris, the curmudgeon icon. Yeah. That face right there, listeners, he's making a face. It's going to be like a guy just kind of doing a little nose wrinkle at you, like, can't believe you've done this. One of those. Yeah. It's just a face, like a smiley face, like a little wrinkle. Chesky's also tough. You see, I can't give him the joy icon, but I can give him the reading icon, and it's going to be a big old eyeball, and it's got a little book in the iris, and that's what he's got, because, man, this guy likes to read.
No. Going to be like it's going to be the Matrix computer thing, kind of falling, falling thing.
Yeah,
that's going to be his icon, because he's reading everything so fast. Yeah.
You guys are hilarious.
Yeah, just book titles just going down really fast.
Yeah. And you're going to have like a surfer icon, because you're always kind of like chill, kind of relaxed. Yeah, like a surfer bro dude with a surfboard, kind of. That's going to be your icon. All right.
The relaxed icon. Always,
you're very kind of like, you know, you're very kind of even keeled always, right?
Is it just a hammock? It's just hanging
there. There you go. Yeah. There you go. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
I'll get in on airs a little bit. I think I liked your chaos thought for yourself though, Soul, because you do read. You'll pick a book and you'll go for it. And then you'll go for a different book, and I'm like, that's a weird book. That's kind of out there. And then you'll just kind of get to them, but not in a bad way. So, all right, there it is. I thought you guys would give me joy, but I appreciate the reading icon as well.
Yeah,
that makes me happy. So,
yeah,
let's do. Eric, what's up?
So, no, the other thing I wanted to bring back on Waybound, because the other thing that this really bothered me, and maybe you guys can help me through this.
Okay.
Like, the more it's well documented, and it's throughout the entire series, that the more hunger you have, the harder it is to control, and the more it kind of consumes or dominates your personality, and it's a struggle, and it's a fight, or whatever. Name me one time we got like where Lyndon had any more than may I have to think about this for a second. No, I'm okay. I mean, he had all the hunger in the world contained within him, and it was nothing. Like, there's no struggle at all. He was, all right, I'm just gonna chill on Cradle for a year or so. No big whoop, and I'm out. I mean, there's just no struggle.
I can try and alleviate a little bit of this at the end when he has kind of all of it. There's also no monarchs to keep pushing that. And so since they kind of created it, it could lose its edge, potentially.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it was
much.
A balance thing, yeah.
But I think it also just speaks to Lyndon's, you know, dedication and his, I'm going to be moving forward and I've got the self-control to do this. You know, like I said earlier, when he is, you know, absorbing things, he has to go through that pain of diverging people's memories and kind of go through the the shock of that. He is able to just say, give me another one. Give me another one. Give me another one. And with that mindset of just like, no, I can handle this. I think it just was that he was never really too much at risk because of his personality for it versus maybe if Yaren had it or if somebody else had that, it might have been more detrimental to them.
I would have liked
more confidence.
I would have liked to have seen some, because look, his the parts of the book that I liked throughout the entire series was where Lyndon had to struggle, where he had to kind of like do something besides use his brute force to win stuff, right? Underlord, which is one of the books I liked, where he kind of came up with creative gadgets and designs, and he was always, he never gave up to what you were talking about earlier, right? But
yeah.
He was always fighting at a disadvantage, and there was always a struggle. The struggle was external, but he was always struggling to succeed. To me, that's where I enjoyed Linden the most, right? And here, I'm like, there's a golden opportunity to see Linden, who has really not, I mean, the external struggles here were there, but I never really felt there was much stakes in his external struggles. There's an opportunity for him to have a really titanic internal struggle between all this hunger mantra, which completely took over the slumbering wraith, right? But it didn't take him over. And I would have liked a little bit more on that.
I agree. But, it was a little confusing. I thought Linden was going to die because when he dies, he would come back because he's still a Dreadcut, and the Dreadcuts come back when they die. So I was waiting for the finale to be like, okay, he got everybody out. Now he's going to die. And then in 10, 20 years, he'll be reborn at a much lower level along with the other Dread Gods, where it's controllable by the rest, and then he can ascend then. That's what I thought we were going to get. And then we got the hangout sesh instead.
Interesting. All right, I'm gonna give you guys a slight hot take from me. It's not... Whoa. I don't think it'll be a hot take to Era or to you, Soul, maybe, but to other Cradle listeners, I think it'll be a hot take. I wish that he had ended the book right after Linden ascends, and you realize that Linden has ascended to the Void instead of to the Abaddon.
And that would have been cool.
And Linden's just like, oh, I'm at the Void, and nobody else knows that he's, you know, from the Abaddon. And then it just kind of cuts. And so the next series or next thought in your mind is like, okay, now he has to get back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that. That would have been cool. I will say I did like Fury with the little cameo, but I do agree that getting that epilogue does put a pin in it, and I feel like it's, or like a bow on this thing, and that he's not trying to go back with Linden and the crew. Like maybe it'll be his kid.
Be done with Linden.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it does sound like he's done with him, even though it sounded to me, and maybe I misread it, it sounded to me like the epilogue was a projected future. It wasn't the actual future. Because the way understood it, it was, I can't remember whose mind construct was like doing a probability
the feature. Information like, requested.
Yeah. Right. It was the information requested type of thing. And then that popped up. So I think that was a predicted future, but I'm not sure it was the actual future. Yeah.
All right, you guys. Okay. Did you have something, Soul?
No, I did like this book though. I don't wanna be the guy who like harped on it too much. This was a lot of fun. I did like to see the end. The fights were really cool. Zeal doing the shield thing with, you know, that was pretty cool. He got his redemption moment, and he got to kill the Weeping Dragon, which we did predict. We did pretty good with our predictions, actually. I will say that. Like, we hit a lot of them, except the whole people dying thing.
We missed on Mercy. We missed on Mercy pretty bad.
That was a whiff, but we did nail all the Dread Gods, and I think we also nailed the Monarchs and who would ascend, too.
We didn't whiff on Mercy. Will White whiffed on Mercy.
Yes. That's on him. That's not on us.
That's not on him, not us. Okay. let's do some favorite scenes, you guys.
Okay.
Or in favorite / least favorite, if you have one that you just really irked you and you want to get it out and talk about it. Do you guys want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Sure.
Okay. I think one of my favorite scenes was Linden is getting ready to advance, you know, finally, and he is talking to the Eight-Man Empire, to two of them. And he's like, hey, you know, here's this bow. And they're like, oh, this is my bow. And then she's like, he's like, okay, well, here's this actual real cool bow for you. And she just like tosses her bow to the side. And she's like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever had. And the guy that's with her is like, hey, you can't do that. That weapon has served you faithfully for years. I'm going to take it and use this. And then he's like, oh, well, I have this other sword for you. And he's like, peace out, bow. You're gone. I'm going to take this super weapon here. And then all the other Eight-Man armies are like, hey, if you had a dagger, I would love that. You know, they just kind of like
creep in. Me?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Everybody, and I just thought that was super hilarious, you know, because he's getting ready to advance. And he wants them to be the protectors to make sure there's no more monarchs. So it's just good.
One of the things I really liked about this book that I thought was good was the Eight-Man Empire. Like all of them.
They were
the right amount of serious and funny, you know, kind of to be there to kind of like cast, like, because in any other context they'd be way overpowered, but the context of this one, they're like really the side character slash comic relief. They mm-hmm. which they did admirably. I thought it was
I thought so. I really like the training montage where Lyndon. I know. Eric doesn't like training montages. This is my favorite part where Lyndon comes by and he's like, okay, we're going to go and steal this super duper cool treasure of some certain whatever quality. And then they're in different locations. They're on like the back of this huge sacred beast bird that's on fire and all this other fun stuff. And they're stealing stuff. And it's very cool. And I like that Lyndon got to steal a whole bunch of things and hoard things because that's what he loves to do most. And he got to help his friends doing it. And that was fun.
I like it.
So I'll tell you, so one of my favorite scenes, just kind of hinted at it. Fury.
Fury is a fun one. That was my next one.
Fury kind of coming back and just kind of like, all right, like now that I know who that's referencing and now
Goku.
That I've seen a couple. I've seen some Dragon Ball Z, right? So
yeah.
With my son now, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool. This is fun.
Yeah, to see him be like,
a lot of fun. Yeah,
he rescues him, and then he's literally walking his buddy, his friend, past his allies, and being like, "Don't fight these guys. They're a waste of time. They can't fight for anything. You want to fight anybody that's this level or above?" And they're just probably looking at him, and he's just keeping going. He's like, "They're not even worth your time. Don't worry about them." And he just brings him out of there. It was great. Yeah. It was hilarious.
That was a lot. Anyway, he's like, "Oh, you want to fight? Come on, let's go." It's like, "I have other stuff to do." He's like,
"But do you though? Fighting is life."
Anyways, favorite scene for sure.
That's a good one. All right, yeah. I'll give you guys. I like this scene a lot. I can't say it's my favorite scene, but this was a really good scene where Reagan Shen is dying, and he goes into his pocket dimension where he has Tiberius the Remnant chained, and he turns into his lion form, and he's like, "I'm gonna die," you know. But he's like, "Maybe I can survive." And then he dies, and his last thought is, you know, "I'm a lion," and his remnant comes back as a man holding a wine glass. And I was like, oh, that's impactful, you know. And it's just like, he was a lion, you know, truthfully, but he had acted so much like a man that's what his remnant became, right? That was his real
nature.
That was just like his real self almost.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's a good one. Soul?
I did like, as cheesy as it is, I liked Lyndon giving his son the bowl of water and to test his son. I thought, you know, that was cute. I liked it. And they didn't spend too much time on it, too. It was a very small thing. And his parents are obviously super powered because they're talking to each other from, you know, across the mansion that they live in. And they're not even in the same room because they know they can hear each other kind of thing. So it was fun to be like, this kid's going to have some weird parents.
And Yaren's like, "Why do you have to do this? You're stupid. Don't do this test. It doesn't mean anything." And Lyndon's like, "I just am going to do it, okay? Like, you can't." Yeah, that was good.
Osriel meeting Lyndon again at the end.
Mm-hmm. That was a good scene.
I mean, just because, you know, it's like, Osriel spent all this time, like, the whole purpose of all of this was for him to become a better person and to have somebody he can depend on, like, be a brother. And that's what Lyndon is at the end. It's like, that's his brother.
Yeah. And Yiren was warming up to him, but barely. And it took like 10 books. And then finally, like, but Lyndon had been warming up to Ethan a lot longer.
There's a whole warming up part, but then there's also like, it's implied, if not like outright stated, that if Lyndon's not at Osriel's power level, now he's close, going to be there pretty soon. Like, he's comparable. So he's an equal, which is something that Osriel has not had for millennia. So
that's very true. I'll give you guys one of my final scenes. I did enjoy the epilogue scenes where they it shows each one of them going to a different world and fixing its problems. You know, Yaren comes in and she's just like, "Okay, who am I going to kill?" And she's like, "Oh, it's this bad guy." And then, you know, she kind of investigates a little bit and is like, "Oh, yep, he is the bad guy." And then she's like, "Okay, problem's done. He's dead. Go live your life. I'm peacing out of here." And, you know, we're in the other girl's perspective who summoned her. And she's like, "Oh, we can't send you back. Like, I can't help you here. Like, You're stuck
forever. It took us 10 years to do this.
Yara's like, peace, I'm out of here. Just like zips away. And Mercy goes to each faction and she's like, okay, this is what you're going to do. And she's so joyful about it. And she's like, but don't make me come back. You don't want this to happen. And then, you know, and she's like, oh, self-replicating machines fail every time. I'm taking this away and you can't have it anymore. Just like a mom.
What made you think this was a good idea? Dangerous.
Yeah. I don't remember his as much, but you know, he goes in with his attitude and he does his stuff. And I just like their different approaches to like solving these problems. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun.
That leads to a least favorite scene of mine. What you're talking about.
Okay.
What makes these guys different than the last executors?
Excuse me?
They're raised by a family.
Yeah. Because
that's it.
Ithan's thing was that everybody in the Abaddon was always like against each other, even though they were working together. And that's why he wanted to create like you said, a family. So the only thing they got different besides, you know, their power levels, just like the Abaddon, they were powerful too, is that he has people that are just, you know, they're a group and they want to work together, even though they literally split them apart for the sake of the story so that they could each have their own world to help. But the goal was for them to work together because they're family.
The last executors worked together too before they were picked off one by one. Again, what is different?
I think the difference is the circumstances and the Abaddon, because that the one judge, Machiel, is gone. And I think since he was so jealous of Ithan, he put pressure on them and caused them more to crack, right? I don't like the executors. They're too powerful. They're not as good. They're not what I want. They're not me, you know? And so he...
Well, to be clear, the Abaddon were they were the direct cause of the Mad King. I mean, they created the Mad King.
Right. No, and that's what I'm saying. I think they'll be past that now that Suriel and Osriel are back. You know, they see, okay, Osriel left. Things got really bad. Now he's back. Okay, we like him. You know, we realize his importance in the system. It's, you know, this might sound bad, but it's like a job that you don't think is a good job, right? But then if that job goes away or that thing goes away and you realize how much, you know, how impactful it is, then when it comes back, it means more to you because you didn't have it. Does that make sense? So they might treat them better. And just, I think the other ones treated it as a job, whereas that's something that Lyndon and them, they treat it like a job, but it's also their bonds, I guess.
What proof do we have that what you say is going to happen? And I'm just asking this because Suriel, for example, isn't the original Suriel. She's a replacement. She's a replacement Phoenix, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's going to be replacement Machiel, who's going to be pretty much like the current Machiel. I mean, because it's been described to us, is that the judges eventually become the avatars of whatever it is they represent. So
yeah.
I'm not sure. I just have to have faith that my vision of the future is that they're going to be fine. And you can't shake that, no matter how much you try.
Sorry, Mr. Curmudgeon. Yeah. No.
We are family. Okay, fine.
That's basically it, I think, is they're going into it with more joy than the other ones. You know, the other ones were dreary, you know. And they were probably slaved too hard, but
yeah, these are the cool executors. Okay, like they got someone who's got the joy icon. Like, what more do you want out of them?
Joy? How? What? When does Lyndon display joy?
He displays joy when he levels up and when he gets points,
and when he steals things.
That's all it is. You just have to make this a point system for Lyndon. Lyndon, every system you bring back, 1,000 points.
And he's like, "I'm on it." He's already back. You're like, 1,000 points, please.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have anything else to really bring up or talk about. I've gone through mine. But did you guys have anything else you wanted to discuss? No,
we hit it all. Unless we want to do like some final series things. Right, what do you got here?
Two things.
Just two small things. Okay. One, I do like how when Lyndon does go Weebound, that he ends up somewhere completely different.
Yeah.
That he doesn't end up with Abaddon. So
it's a good touch.
So I like that, you know, kind of like, yeah, you don't necessarily end up where you think you're going to end up. And this is maybe why some people don't end up where they should end up. So I like that. That was a nice touch. And then the other thing I didn't like is I was about 40 pages in and I'm like, oh, great. This first half of the book is going to be Ghostwater all over again. And I swear what I wanted to stop, send a little message on our group chat and go, Damn it, Soul. But
yeah. Ghostwater Part 2.
Yeah. That's funny.
And I know the line that did it for you, too. It was when they named the place Ghost Wind Hall.
As soon as they said ghost, I'm like, I'm done. Like, as
you're out.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I remember that. I saw that. I put my iPad down. Mm-hmm. I went out, grabbed my bike, went on a bike ride. I'm like, I'm done. I cannot do this right now. So.
Yeah. No, it was good. It wasn't too much like any specific one book before it. Yeah. So I guess overall impressions, I loved it. This is not like, you know, my favorite series of all time, but it's definitely in the top 10, mostly because of the themes of improvement and bettering yourself and I guess trying to stay humble. Yeah.
Books are fun. They're supposed to be fun, right?
This is a fun series.
You know, like, sure, you know, I got to read a lot of stuff for work, which is serious and dry or whatever, or I got to read, you know, whatever. Like, there are a lot of times that you read for not fun, but like when you're reading for these books, like, you're reading hopefully primarily for entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you get some other stuff on top of it, even better. But if you're having a good time, then the book has done its job. And, you know, this series reminded me of quit trying to worry about, like, oh, this is a great, the plot isn't super tight or the grammar isn't perfect. Whatever. It was a fun book. Let go and just enjoy it. So
trying to not get too nitpicky in the details, but just let it go through you.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think I like this book a lot. I like the series a lot. I definitely think this book is slightly ahead of middle of the pack of this book. Maybe even slightly ahead of the middle of the pack of this book. But every book has issues. This one had certain issues that were just a little bit more visible, I think so. But I don't have anything else to say. I liked it. It was fun. Thank you guys for reading it. Oh, Soul, what you got?
I got one last thing.
Okay, let's hear it.
More series need to do bloopers because
it's
hilarious and I love it. And I think it's a great way for the author to just have a little fun with something without totally demeaning their book or derailing it in a way that they didn't want to officially. Yeah, that's all.
I co-signed to that and I'll just add just a little bit on top of it. It's really hard. It's obvious now, like, it's really hard for authors to write stuff that's funny. It's hard because humor is very specific, right?
Yeah.
So when you find an author who can do humor, that's a treasure, right? And Will White does humor well. He does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So bloopers, whatever else comes into his imagination, I'm there for that. So
great. I love it too. You can't go wrong with a good blooper scene. I did classify that as a good blooper scene there, just for all you guys. There are some bad ones eventually somewhere, I'm sure. But I think that's everything we have to talk about. So, you know, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, Solution.
Hey, I'll see you guys. Hold on. I had this one ready. It's the end of an era.
Let's all groan in sympathy for Soul here. Thanks, Era, for participating and reading this series with us. We've loved having you.
No dad jokes for me. Thanks, guys.
Just to get things out of the way, of course, you can join us by joining the Patreon of the Legendarium. You can find us on their Discord. We're always welcome to have and talk to anybody about Cradle or other books that they're reading. Thanks to Horizon Brave for starting the podcast, and thanks to Craig for loaning us a part of his media empire. And we'll talk to you guys about the next book. We'll see you then.
See you.